everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Together we welcome you to the program. It's Wednesday, midweek edition, 23rd of September, 2020. Tom, this is the first full day of autumn. Autumn officially began yesterday morning, so this is the first 24-hour day of autumn. Unfortunately, for autumn-like temperatures, we are going to have to wait quite a while, at least probably through next week. I don't like this forecast, Tom. You know how I feel about this extended heat. We're talking 104, 105 next week.
That's right. Summer will not give it up.
It's unprecedented, these late season temperatures. Those are certainly going to be record breakers.
Yep, and maybe even higher than that from something that you mentioned to me. The National Weather Service might have more in store for us next week.
Boy, I hope not. I hope it's not going any higher. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening. You can hear this program literally anywhere in the world. Of course, at buckmastershow.com, the Buckmaster Show Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And before we do go to the Live Line, as if 2020 hasn't had enough bad news, the Buckmaster Show notes with sadness the unexpected passing yesterday of our friend Jim Kelly. Jim was a devoted listener and occasional participant of this program. Our thoughts and prayers are with Jim's family, especially his mother, Marilyn Cressy. We are so sorry, Marilyn, for the loss of your son, Jim Kelly. Well, a new study combines evolutionary gene studies from coronavirus samples with computer-simulated epidemics and detailed travel records to reconstruct the speed of the coronavirus across the world in unprecedented detail. This study was recently published in the journal Science. The results suggest an extended period of missed opportunity when extensive testing and contact tracing might have prevented COVID-19 from becoming so established in North America and Europe. A University of Arizona researcher, Dr. Michael Warraby, led the interdisciplinary team of scientists. And this was scientists really from United States, Belgium, Canada, and the UK. 13 different research institutions were involved in this. Dr. Warraby heads up the University of Arizona Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology. He's a member of the University of Arizona Bio5 Institute, and he joins us now on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about, were you surprised at the result? First of all, what was the genesis of the study? And then we'll talk a little bit about the results.
Sure, yeah. So the genesis of the study goes back to mid-January when we got reports that the first COVID-19 patient on U.S. soil had been diagnosed. This was someone who had traveled from Wuhan, China, to SeaTac Airport, and then home to Snohomish County, just north of Seattle, started feeling poorly and had been aware of the CDC's messaging about this new pneumonia in Wuhan. Went to the doctor, got a diagnosis, and from that point there, we then in the U.S. experienced about 6 weeks of being kind of flying blind, where we knew that people were arriving with the virus after this first guy. What we didn't know is if these arrivals were like little sparks that were starting outbreaks locally with community transmission. Right at the end of February, the alarm bells started ringing because more cases, this is when people in that nursing home in the Seattle area started dying. We're coming up in California. And when scientists paired the genome of the viruses that were being sampled in late February with the one that had been sampled from this very first patient in January, they were very similar, only a couple of mutations out of the 30,000 nucleotides that make up the genome. And so the inference was at that point, holy crap, this guy back in January actually started the outbreak, and we're 6 weeks into it already. So that was sort of the question that I wanted to tackle. Was that really what happened? Or did the virus actually get established later than that from some other patient?
Was this guy patient number one in North America?
As far as we know, he was patient number one in all of North America. We haven't found any earlier example of the virus landing on U.S. soil.
What could we have done if we had really acted aggressively? Hey, this is something new. You know, we'd had warning signs out of China before this patient number one. What could we have done, Michael, taking aggressive action right at the beginning, say within the first couple of weeks?
Yeah, so by January 10th, colleagues of mine had published the very first genome sequence of the virus in China. And at that point, you know, within days, multiple labs around the world had developed tests, these so-called PCR tests that we're all familiar with now that can detect the genetic material of the virus. So within days of January 10th, the world had this tool that is able to find people who have the virus. And unfortunately, in the States, the tool wasn't really rolled out very quickly or very successfully. The CDC decided to develop their own version of the test, which took extra weeks. They then sent out kits to various labs around the country, but were contaminated and kept giving false positive readings, which caused further delays of weeks. So in these crucial weeks where you have a chance of catching those first embers and putting them out before they become big forest fires, and sorry to use an analogy that is particularly painful at the moment in the west of the U.S., but we did have a chance to snuff them out. Other places like South Korea and Iceland actually did that. They had multiple people land in their country, bring the virus in, but they were testing so well that they were able to get on top of it and more or less stay on top of it, whereas in the States, it just burned out of control.
How did it get to Canada?
Well, that's an interesting question that I was looking at as well. Some of the genomes from this early outbreak in Washington State and surrounding areas, so British Columbia, where I'm from actually, is just to the north of Washington State. And there's a lot of travel between China and Vancouver in BC. So that was a plausible route where this Washington State outbreak might have been initiated from. You know, maybe it didn't go China to Washington. Maybe it went China to Vancouver, got established, started spreading, and then moved southward down. And some of the genomic sequences looked like maybe they were telling us that that's exactly what had happened. In our study, we show that those genomes actually have little errors at key sites that completely mislead you into thinking that there was this Canadian origin and a Canadian to U.S. spread of the virus. In fact, those viruses are just ones that have moved up from Washington into B.C., so the Canadian link didn't pan out after all.
As an aside, I've spent a lot of time traveling all over Canada, a lot of time in your home province of British Columbia, spent a lot of time out on Vancouver Island. I've been following very carefully the Canadian outbreak. It's a completely different story than the United States, Michael Warraby.
It is, and I've been looking north as well this summer and comparing and contrasting. British Columbia has a population of about 5 million, so, you know, about 80% of what Arizona has. Arizona is at about 6,000 deaths, if memory serves, from COVID so far. British Columbia is at about 250. Vancouver Island, which has, you know, hundreds of thousands of people on it, the total number of cases, not deaths, but cases, is about 150.
Oh, my goodness.
Just completely, completely different pictures. And part of it is that British Columbia was quick to institute these sort of isolation measures and mask wearing. And that had a big impact in the early days that, you know, people might think about masks as something that are it's there to protect you. But really, the main function of masks at the moment is to protect the people around you in case you have the virus and are spreading it without knowing it. So that's had a big impact in BC.
That would be like, I think our the caseload here in Tucson was about 150 to 200 cases just in the last that have been recorded from the Arizona Department of Health. That's one day in Tucson, and you're saying up on Vancouver Island, that's 150 cases for the whole outbreak.
That's the situation so far. Interestingly, BC is going to some degree the wrong direction now, and the caseload is starting to creep up to over 100 cases a day. Still, but fewer than we're seeing in Arizona. But it just goes to show you that these measures are not one-time things, and the pandemic is not in the rearview mirror. It's something that if you let down your defenses, it can come roaring back anywhere. And it is good that Arizona has turned the corner in a big way over these last several weeks compared to late July when things were looking just out of control.
Okay, Michael Warraby, stick with us. We've got another segment with you. I've got a bunch more questions for you, and we'll keep you till about 12:30 today. But we're going to take our first break here on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, a beautiful 13-acre site with every imaginable thing green possible. They have several dozen green houses that are housing some great plants that would look really great this fall when it finally does cool down a little bit in your backyard. Green Things AZ and their other component of the property, Zocalo Village, zocalovillage.com, the website for Green Things, greenthingsaz.com. Let's continue now our discussion with Dr. Michael Worraby. Dr. Worraby is head of the University of Arizona Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and he is a member of the University of Arizona's Bio5 Institute. He also has headed up this recent study that was published in the journal Science about how coronavirus took hold in North America and in Europe. One thing that fascinates me, Michael, is the whole possibility of some people having some kind of genetic maybe predisposition to the coronavirus. We're hearing that Hispanic, First Nation people, Black, African Americans seem to have more of a predisposition to this. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that is one of the features of this virus, is that the outcomes can range so dramatically from people who have the virus get better and never knew they had it, obviously all the way to people suffering severe cases and dying. And there has been a disproportionate impact in Hispanic communities, Black communities, and in our state in particular, Native American communities. And so one of the key questions that you need to ask when you see a pattern like this is this something biological and genetic? Differences between groups, are genetic differences playing some role here? But, you know, what it's actually looking like, the more data that we accumulate, this is actually in exposure risk differences. So often what you'll have is a lot of overlap between those communities and lower income jobs, for example, where, you know, you have a job at the grocery store or driving a truck to the grocery store. You may not be able to do that job at home over a Zoom link on your computer. You have to be out on the front lines. And so there's a lot of evidence now that the disproportionate impact in communities is actually driven more by just this exposure risk. They're out in the world delivering packages to your door or working the till at the grocery store. And so this is an important thing that that people need to be aware of.
Let me ask you about whether or not corona The C-19 coronavirus is going to be with us pretty much forever, like the great flu of 1918 still is still around from what I understand, in different modified versions.
You're exactly right that the flu viruses that we get vaccinated for every year, five out of eight of the sort of chromosomes, the genetic units that make up the genome of those viruses, come right from the 1918 virus. So it made a big splash and then settled in to become a perennial infection of humans. I would say it's almost certain that this new virus is going to do the same thing. There are five other human coronaviruses that people didn't hear too much about before 2020. They cause about one-fifth of the cases of the common cold. Obviously, they are much more mild than this new virus. What I think is going to happen is this new virus will become established. And once all of us have either been infected by it once or hopefully received the vaccine before we become infected, it's going to remove the teeth of the virus, in the sense that once you have some immunity to it, even if it does become something that you catch every year or two, like the flu, I don't think we're going to see the terrifyingly high rates of fatality and serious complications. That's my hope. There's lots of good reason to believe that. But we still have a lot to learn about the virus.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the direction we're going. Dr. Michael Warraby with us. Michael, we have another caller who would like to ask you a question. This is caller Roberta. Go ahead, Roberta.
Okay, I heard a doctor say that the darker-skinned people don't absorb the sun and make the vitamin D that lighter-skinned people do, and that vitamin D is instrumental in fighting the virus.
That is a very good question, and that has been one of the possible explanations. Vitamin D, which, as you correctly say, is something that our body makes when we're exposed to the sun, does have important effects on the immune system. And so if you are very suppressed in vitamin D, you can be more susceptible to respiratory viruses. So far, again, that's not looking like it's panning out as a major explanation for differences between different populations. But it is something that people are still looking at, and there certainly may be a small role, and really all of us would do well to monitor our vitamin D levels. You can ask your doctor to check them and consider supplementing if they are low.
Michael, final question. I've only got about 45 seconds. Is this a situation where we will have waves of this, like with the 1918 influenza, or is it pretty much in this country, it seems like it's just really one wave going on?
Yeah, I agree. We've experienced one large wave that's never really gone away, although as you see in Arizona, the epidemic is very responsive to the so-called non-pharmaceutical interventions, just a fancy way of saying stuff like masks and distancing that you can do without fancy drugs. And so we are in the driver's seat in the sense of while we're waiting for a vaccine, these things are powerful and they have the secondary benefit of keeping the economy going.
All right, Michael Warraby, thank you very much. Michael Head of the University of Arizona Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology and a member of the university's Bio5 Institute. Michael, let's do it again down the road here. I enjoyed this very much.
I did too. Anytime. Take care, Bill.
Thank you very much. Dr. Michael Warraby, our guest on the Buckmaster Show, Midway Point in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Guests appear on the Buckmaster Show live line, courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, CBS Network News. Then we're going to talk travel with Ryan Hansen right after this.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our insider travel talk here on the program with our travel contributor, Ryan Hansen. Mr. Hansen, President and Chief Operating Officer of Bon Voyage Travel, Arizona's premier travel agency since 1976. The Bon Voyage travel experts will create a trip of a lifetime for you. Three Southern Arizona Bon Voyage offices, River and Campbell, Green Valley and Oro Valley, bvtravel.com, the first stop in making your travel dreams come true. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Bill. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good talking with you again, and maybe next month we'll get you here in studio. Good to see. It will be good to see your smiling face once
yes,
again.
I like it. Getting back in studio will feel normal, and that's what we're trying to all strive to get to.
And that's what we are striving for. And it's such a challenging time for all of us, especially for your industry, the travel industry, and the millions of folks who are associated with it. I think the good news, there's some optimistic news happening. There's a path forward being presented by, first of all, the cruise industry, the airlines. And I think we're seeing a real pent-up demand for travel. Just take a look at the long lines to get into many of America's national parks. People do want to get out again, Ryan Hansen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think through this time frame we were ever concerned necessarily about demand. I think we knew more and more as the days went by that the walls of your home would start closing in on you. And as Americans, right, we are born with that freedom spirit. So getting out and seeing the world is really part of the fabric of our life. And not having that ability, the demand was going to be there. But how do we do it safely? How do we do it with health being the number one proponent? We're finally seeing some transitions and some recommendations coming from the cruise industry, which clearly took the biggest national hit from a media standpoint with the issues that happened early on during the pandemic. And we're very excited to seeing, you know, what's coming out from these organizations as they make their recommendations to the government officials, like at the CDC. And so we can dive into kind of what those recommendations look like.
Yeah, I want to dive into these recommendations, which come, I think they stem from the Cruise Lines International Association, known as the CLIA. What are they proposing? What is their path forward, Ryan Hansen?
Yeah, CLIA is what it is known as, and it's really it's an organization that combines all of the cruise lines ideas, thoughts, and really is a kind of a regulatory piece of the industry. And they have made some recommendations, as has a couple other organizations called the Healthy Sail Panel, and that's a group of executives from the Royal Caribbean family of brands and the Norwegian Cruise Line family of brands, alongside the former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, the former commissioner, the former secretary of Human and Health Services at the national level. So they've taken into account all of the healthy things. And the path that they're looking forward to is probably not unlike the things that you and I would be looking for. And it starts with testing and screening. There's really five pillars that these two entities are pushing back to the CDC and saying, we are prepared now for testing and screening to try to really reduce the number of people that board a cruise ship that have been exposed to the coronavirus and in this situation have contracted it. And so to create a mini bubble, and because of testing now rapid results, testing is now becoming more widely seen. It's an inexpensive test. That obviously were some of the hurdles early on were really the cost of these tests and the ability to have valid tests come back so that at the cruise terminal, you have to either produce a test that shows you're negative or take a test right there and wait for that result to come back before you can even board the ship. By reducing the number of people that have even been exposed to it, you are already starting on the right footing. And the other...
Go ahead, Bill. I was just going to say that is also the path that has been taken by many airlines and entering many countries about the test proof of testing. But go ahead now with cruises, and they're going to also take a cue from what the airlines are doing about physical distancing.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we can anticipate, especially early on as the return to cruising happens, that you can expect to wear your personal protective equipment. So you're going to have a facial covering where social distancing is not possible, and that is in some common areas and moving about freely on the ship. But then once you are seated in a restaurant or maybe a theater, they are going to keep capacity down in order to achieve the ability to be physically distanced in the public areas by just reducing the number of people that are going to be on each of these ships. That is 100% one of the plans for this. But in addition to that, the increased technology and ability for sanitation protocols, ventilation systems, and you know, you and I have seen the results and the data, and the CDC has vacillated on, is this an airborne contagion? Is it not an airborne one? Well, the cruise lines are not taking any chances. They have increased and put massive dollars into ventilation systems with filtering to try to eliminate as best as they can the potential for the contagion to be spread through the air. They are working really diligently. Another area that a lot of people have asked about is what if? Right? What's the response that a cruise line is going to have in case something happens on board? What's the contingency planning? How are you going to execute if someone does come down with the pathogen? And so what are you going to do? Those types of protocols, we're seeing the testing, the rapid results, the ability to do it and a widespread nature for an inexpensive cost allows you to potentially short-term quarantine somebody. There's a cruise line right now that has sailed in Norway with Norwegian passengers called Sea Dream, and that cruise line is actually coming to Barbados in November. So if you're interested, Bill, I know you love the Caribbean. There's going to be seven-night sailings, round-trip Barbados, where you fly in and take the cruise. Because the cruise ship only has 144 passengers, they're going to be diligently testing throughout the ship in the itinerary. And if somebody comes down with it, they quarantine everybody. And within 2 hours, they can test every single person on ship, have the results back to know you're free to move about the ship. Or maybe we do need to seek medical care for somebody that does test positive. So those steps are really being looked at. And then there's two final things that clearly will be interesting to follow, and that is cruises are not just about what happens on ship, Bill. You know this. Some of the best parts of cruising are off-ship excursions. And so trying to keep that bubble environment, excursions that are certified and hosted by the cruise line is most likely where it's going to go. Mandatory excursions, you can only take them if the cruise line hosts it. That way they can control the environment that you are moving off ship and about town in. And then the last piece is just mitigating risk for crew members. Because of the way the ship quarters the crew, because of the number of crew, they're talking about testing crew members very frequently, like almost daily or multiple times in the day to make sure, because they know how those people are on ship all the time moving about. So mitigating those risks, not only for clearly the number one reason is the health and safety of the crew member, but then the second piece is the lack of transmission about the ship. So I'm really excited. While this is going to change the reality of our cruise experience in the short term and most likely the long term, I am of the belief that most of our citizens in the country are willing to take on some inconveniences, if not a lot of inconveniences, to keep people healthy, but to be able to get back to normal travel.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positive things coming out of the travel industry. And Ryan, just in summary, I think 2021 is shaping up to be a very much a transition year. People are going to return not only to cruising, but to international air travel. And there's talk about the international airlines getting together with more widespread airport testing. But I think the bottom line here in summary is the pathways are moving, and they're moving toward safer, healthier travel.
Yeah, we were in a stalemate there, Bill, for a while where you didn't know. The unknown was a bigger fear than the known.
Right.
And now after a four-month exhaustive research project, we've seen these recommendations, and I think most people would look at these recommendations as sound, and there could be more coming. There could be some adjustments from the CDC, but it's all positive moving towards a really open 2021 travel season.
Are you still doing the virtual?
We absolutely are. So if you're interested in going to Costa Rica, Bill,
I've been there. Love it.
3 o'clock today. Yeah, 3 o'clock today, we're going to be talking about Costa Rica. So go to bvtravel.com and sign up. Every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, we host a webinar talking about a destination that may inspire you to travel next year.
All right, Ryan, we'll talk again in October. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Ryan Hansen, our travel contributor on the Buckmaster Show, president and chief operating officer of Bon Voyage Travel. The 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice interview series of the candidates continues coming up right after this. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning to visit Silver City so you're ready when New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find all sorts of information about great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And let's go now on the Live Line as we continue with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. All of our candidate interviews, not only from this program, but our two other local programs, are archived at kvoi.com. We welcome now TUSD candidate Ravi Gravois-Shaw. Ravi is one of six candidates for three seats on the TUSD governing board, three seats out of a board of five, so there's going to be a big change. Ravi, how are you?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on your program today.
Tell our listeners about yourself and why you want to become a board member. This is a non-paying, it's basically a community service, but a very important community service position.
No, exactly. There's a little bit about me. I'm a TUSD parent. We have three kids, and my oldest is a third grader here in our district. And so we're living what many parents are living right now in terms of virtual learning in our family. I'm also a family physician in our community and been listening to my patients and their parents over the years about what's going well in our schools and what some of the challenges are. I'm also married to an educator who spent most of his career as an elementary school teacher and was a principal in TUSD for 4 years. So I've had a lot of just experiences as a parent, as a community physician, and as a spouse of an educator that really drove me to run. And my big goals on the TUSD governing board would be to make sure we have a sound, healthy COVID response, and so that when we open our schools, it's done in a safe way for our students, our teachers, and the families they all come home to, that we have financial sustainability and transparency. I've been on the audit committee of our school board for the last 2 years as a parent member, and so been engrossed in the finances and budget of our district, and want to make sure that our finances are really held to a different standard so that we can really make impacts for our students and for achievement. And finally, to address disparities and inequities throughout our district so that every student from every part of TUSD have the same opportunities for an outstanding public education.
How would you judge in this path forward that is being taken now by the current board? As a physician, are they being as health conscious as they should be, Ravi?
You know, as a parent of an 8-year-old girl who is very much a social butterfly, I so want her back in school, in her classrooms, interacting with her peers, with the adults in her life, outside the family. And that's what really we want as parents. As a family physician, you know, I've seen the impact COVID has had on our community and the devastation it's had on my patients and their families and so many around us. And I think the TUSD governing board, in terms of opening up remotely and doing the virtual Zoom, which isn't ideal, but is in the best interest of our students and teachers and the families they come home to. I know they vetted a potential hybrid plan last night at the governing board meeting, and we'll look at that again in a few weeks as we get closer to the time period after fall break that we're hoping to go to a hybrid model. And we'll see what the numbers show, whether Pima County's COVID numbers are increasing and whether they're decreasing and it's safe for everyone to be back in school learning live again.
There is a financial cost, of course, of all of this to TUSD. You are losing, the district's losing some students, parents who say that they really want their children to have the face-to-face experience immediately, and they're going to places where they can get that, whether it's charter schools or otherwise. So there's going to be a cost here, a financial cost, that you, if you are elected as a new board member, that is going to be a huge piece that of the puzzle that will have to be solved in the new year.
You know, without a doubt, you know, we need to make sure that our finances are sound, and whether that's through recruitment of students, whether they come back to TUSD when things are back to whatever normal they're going to be next year, and really working to make sure we meet parents and students' needs. You know, I think TUSD has a lot of good things in terms of its how it's handling its COVID response. I think its communication could be better. As a parent, I didn't know until the day before my daughter's first day of classes on Zoom what her schedule was going to be and how to support her. And so I think there are things that we can definitely improve on to make sure that parents are informed about what's going on, are part of the process and engaged, and that we keep families and students in TUSD and bring them back when everything is all back to normal.
What will the priority be other than the finances and the COVID response? Will the priority be, again, focusing on the DSEG order, which I believe is the longest running DSEG order of any school district in the United States?
Well, that's definitely going to be an important work of the years to come, whether or not the DSEG order and whether we have unitary status legally or not, the work of reducing disparities and inequities throughout our district will continue. But I think in terms of the other big priority, it's going to have to be, as you mentioned, the student retention and getting families back into TUSD. And when I talk to families around our district, they choose TUSD. They choose a school because of the computer science program in one school or dance program in another. You know, our school that our daughter goes to in TUSD is an OMA school, which means it has a lot more music and arts than other schools might. You know, our daughter was able to be in an underwater opera in her second grade year, which was super amazing for her to be able to do that. And we love that part of her school. So I think making sure that we fund and support different programs that set our schools apart from our competitors and other districts and the charter schools, and we make sure parents are aware of what we can offer in TUSD that so many other schools and districts can't offer.
Ravi, what is an underwater opera? I've just got to ask.
She was a seashell or a clam or something, and they had a bunch of songs. There were some squids and other costumes. It was a great experience witnessing that and seeing her. As a physician, I'm very STEM oriented, and being able to see her thrive in the arts and music was a really cool experience.
We're speaking with Ravi Ravi Gravois Shaw.
Yes,
there I go.
Gravois, like Illinois. Gravois Shaw,
like Illinois, my home state. Tell me a little bit about. You talked a little bit about your background. Have you always been kind of interested in education? And do you think TUSD gets a bad rap generally, PR wise, Ravi?
Yeah, I've been interested in education for a long time. Seeing my own spouse's experiences as an elementary school teacher. A decade ago in Chicago, where we used to live, from Illinois myself, and then seeing his experiences as a elementary school principal in TUSD and really understanding what it takes to educate our students and to run our schools, which is something I could never fathom in terms of the career path that I've chosen. So I've definitely been interested in education for a long time. But until we had a TUSD student, which was, we're in our fourth year as TUSD parents now, and our twins are 2.5, so we'll be TUSD parents for the next 16 years. Until we have had our TUSD student and we're TUSD parents, that really hits home in terms of the commitment to making sure our district, thrives and works for our family. Because if it works for our family, hopefully it'll thrive and work for all Tucson families.
This is a down ballot kind of race, and I do see a lot of signs on street corners. But getting the word out is a challenge in these COVID times, isn't it, Ravi?
It is. Normally we'll be out knocking on doors and talking to voters, and we're definitely limiting that because of social distancing and safety for myself and my family, as well as all of our volunteers. And so we're looking at other ways to reach out to voters. I'm really excited to be on your show, and hopefully the listeners are paying attention to my candidacy as well as other candidates down ballot and making sure that their vote really counts.
All right. Ravi Gravois Shaw, where do we find out more about you? Your website, please.
Our website is Dr. Ravi for TUSD. That's DrRaviFortusD.com.
And where are you from in the Chicago area? Just curious.
I was born and raised there. Grew up on the west suburbs and lived in Lakeview and Oak Park my last few years there before we moved to Tucson.
Oak Park was a rival of ours at Nutria Township High School in Winnetka, Illinois, where I'm from. Well met.
Yep.
So there you go.
Small world.
All right. Thank you, Ravi.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show on this midweek edition, cramming a lot of content into a one-hour program. My thanks to Tom Fairbanks. Thanks, Tom. We put it together here, ready now for the next program, the very popular program, Dave Ramsey talking about money. It's Buckmaster Midweek. Tomorrow we'll be back with you, 12:04. Have a great afternoon.